Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, February 13th, 2011, and this is show number 299. Can't believe the 300th show is next week. I still have up the gorgeous and giant poster George from Tulsa sent me for the 200th episode. Whenever I tell people at work about the podcast, I point to the poster sort of as proof, going, see? They like me. They really like me. Anyway, I just love looking at the poster every day. George, I just still love it. Well, on Friday, I did my usual ritual of sitting at Starbucks for a couple of hours, sipping coffee and pretending to work on the podcast. Partway through my ritual, the woman next to me asked the woman on the other side of her about her Windows laptop, that she was thinking about getting a laptop. Oh, poor Shelley. You know how this turned out for her, right? As soon as the other woman got distracted, I jumped in and started telling Shelley how great the Mac is. There went 45 minutes of Shelley's life while I blathered on about Macs, iPads, podcasting, Ustream, Word versus Pages. It was awesome. In all seriousness, she really did seem interested and said she might even give the show a listen. Perhaps that was just to get me to leave her alone. But if you're listening, thanks for letting me bother you, Shelley. Oh, we have a huge show this week. We've got a bunch of listener contributions that are just awesome. We've got the last three interviews from Macworld, and I even did a review of my own. Remember, by the way, that the interviews are available in video form over on podfeet.com if you'd like to see what we're talking about. One of my favorite developers in the Mac community is Reggie Ashworth. Reggie wrote the fantastic application AppDelete, which is an application that deletes everything about an application when you're tired of it, gets rid of all the cruft that apps leave around if you just throw them in the trash. Over the years, Reggie has tuned it and improved the information you get when you ask to delete. I've been a big fan for years. Now, let's find a new problem for Reggie to solve. How many of us have a video we need to convert from one format to another? Well, I'm a big fan of the freeware Handbrake from handbrake.fr. I've been using it for years. But then Reggie created VidConvert, and I figured I just have to give it a try because Reggie's made me happy before. I decided to apply VidConvert to a very specific video conversion problem. We all have these cute little point-and-shoot cameras that take reasonably good video. I mean, you know, at least they're fun at parties, right? So what problem is that causing? Huge video files, that's what. These little point-and-shoots save the videos as .avi files, in a lot of cases anyway, and it turns out that AVI is a really inefficient codec. By the way, if you haven't played along with our home game before, codecs are coder decoders, the software that takes a video and makes it playable on your computer. Some of the older codecs are really inefficient and don't do the best job. There are better options these days, like MP4s with H.264 encoding, for example, and those will create a higher quality video that's actually much smaller. Now, why do we care about all this mumbo-jumbo? Well, in the last 2 weeks, I've had two people ask me how to regain disk space on their limited hard drives, and they both had tons of little videos all in AVI format. Well, it's time to give VidConvert a try. I decided to throw a video at it from Macworld from a couple of years ago. You see, during the Cirque du Mac party, this female acrobat came down on a trapeze. Well, you had to be there. Anyway, this little video AVI file I took is 13 entire seconds long, and it chews up 26.3 megabytes of disk space. It's only 640 by 480, for crying out loud. I looked back in the folder where I saved it, and evidently I tried a few tools way back when to try and compress it. I'd created an MOV file encoded with H.264, and then it cut it down a little more than half. It cut it down to 15.7 from 26.3 megabytes, that is, and it looked about the same. Well, this week, I tried throwing that trapeze artist at VidConvert from Reggie. It took that file down from 26.3 megabytes to a mere 3.5 megabytes as an MP4 with H.264 encoding. Now you're thinking, this video must look like crapola, right? No, it looks better than the original. I know, I wrote to Reggie and I asked him what kind of black magic he's employing that would reduce the file size by 87% and make it a better video. He said, yes, I've seen that myself, but I'm not telling you how I did it. I don't know what he's doing. Well, like any good video encoder, there are a lot of options to get a lot in, but if you choose H.264 from the advanced menu and MPEG-4 from the main menu, you should be really happy. VidConvert is a whopping $8 over at reggieashworth.com. Now, I'll give you one more reason to look at Reggie Ashworth, his applications, AppDelete and VidConvert. This week, Jesse Green, who happens to be blind, asked me a video question, and I suggested VidConvert. Yes, he's blind, and he's also doing video conversion. Jesse decided to try out both VidConvert and AppDelete. They were mostly accessible, but he found a few areas where they didn't work quite right with VoiceOver, so he contacted Reggie directly. Reggie is working with him and actively modifying the code to improve the VoiceOver experience. He's not promising to work on it. He's actually working on it. Now, that's the sign of a responsive developer. Again, you can find AppDelete and VidConvert over at ReggieAshworth.com.
Anyone else attend Macworld 2011 virtually by following highlights on Twitter? Missing cables, discharged batteries, Allison's broken lens, Katie's nearly broken ankle, Victor's medical confinement, John F. Braun's bad weather and delayed flights. Even unflappable Rose had an anxious moment when the MiFi I loaned her locked up, rendering her incommunicado. So thanks to those of you who did risk and survive Macworld. All those podcasts and videos are great for those of us who can't or won't travel. Maybe Macworld should go virtual. It was pretty close this year, though the reports I followed suggest it should be named iPad Case World. But if Macworld is to stay in the real world, my friends at the Tulsa Chamber of Commerce would sure enjoy the opportunity to bring it here. A nice central location, brand new convention facilities, and all the steer sushi you might want to eat. A much bigger deal for Tulsa than San Francisco, and I would at least be close to my own doctor. Back in 296, before Macworld, I described how to use Gmail as a free encrypted cloud backup. Here's the conclusion of that topic. Google rents extra storage to regular Gmail accounts, but not yet to Google Apps accounts. 20 extra gigabytes in the Google Cloud costs only $5 a year. Because I am backing up more than 20 gigabytes of photos into Picasa, I chose the next step up, 80 gigabytes for $20. Need 16 terabytes? Only $4,096. If your credit card can handle the load, so can Google. Though I'd think your year would expire long before you could upload 16 terabytes. Added storage is shared among services connected to your Gmail account. Gmail itself, Google Documents, and Picasa photo albums, and more. With 20 gigabytes, you can upload large videos to Google Docs and share them out with a YouTube-like interface. Photos can be uploaded to Picasa or to Google Docs and shared from there. Google provides its own uploader, but you can also use CyberDuck, Transmit4, and others. Last summer, Picasa added a batch uploader for photos and provides the option to reduce file size or upload originals. If you do set up Gmail as your cloud backup, remember not to share files from that account. Keep it secret. What the bad guys can't find, they can't hack. In my Google Apps domain at work, I use Google's two-step verification, a big security enhancement. Google is rolling out two-step to regular Gmail accounts, so watch for it. To log on, you need your user ID, your password, and a code sent to your cell phone. With two-step verification enabled, even if the bad guys find your account and guess your password, they still can't get in without physical access to your phone. Links in the show notes.
Well, George, I've had it on my to-do list for weeks to actually try this out. I have to give it a try now. It sounds pretty cool. I'd especially like to be able to share out big videos. That would be pretty fun. Well, let's hear another one of our Macworld video interviews right now. I'm here with Wade McNary of L5 Technologies, and he's got some crazy little gadget to go on the iPhone here. How are you doing, Wade?
I'm doing fine, Allison. Thank you. So what we're selling is L5 Universal Remote, and what it enables you to do is take all of your IR devices and everything that comes with an IR remote, which is for the average American family is 5 devices on their coffee table. And what you can do is set up whatever user interface you want on the iPod Touch or iPad or iPhone, and then combine all the functions. If you want to, you can change the button style, the shape and the size, the color, and set up exactly how you want it to be. And I've done some that are very simple. This is sort of my
stock looking.
This is my mom's remote, so I can push the button. It has the TV stations that she watches and just the minimal functions.
So that's kind of looking good to me.
That's right. People prefer the simpler remotes. And that's what you can't do with a standard remote. And even with other universal remotes, you can't take off the buttons that you don't want and make the other buttons bigger.
If for those only listening, he's holding up a regular remote that, how many buttons is that?
There's
like 70?
Probably 60 or 70
buttons. 60 or 70 buttons on this thing.
All
and
tiny,
it's typical.
They're all the same shape and size.
That's awesome.
So what the application L5 remote is a free download on iTunes, and then the infrared transmitter is $49.95 retail.
Okay, so you plug that transmitter into the dock connector.
That's right.
And then you download the application for the iPhone, iPod Touch, whatever.
That's right.
And then you can go through and program it. Do you teach it with the remote, or how does that work?
There are two modes. You can either teach nose-to-nose from the original remote, or you can download from a database on the web.
Oh, very cool. So you said $49.95 for the dongle for the...
That's right.
And then and the application's free.
It's free.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Allison.
Hi, Allison and fellow Nozilla castaways. Kirshen from Cedar Rapids here with a review of Mail Acton from InDev Software. But first, as always, there's a problem to be solved. You like to be able to triage your email inbox in your quest to attain inbox zero nirvana. My problem has always been that in order to get that inbox to zero, I had to move the email to a folder to file it away. This, of course, meant either dragging the mail item to the appropriate folder, many times inadvertently filing into the wrong folder. Alternatively, you could use the menu command move to or copy to and scroll down to pick the folder. Not terribly useful if you had several bills to file away and you had to pop the menu, scroll and click to select the same folder. Of course, you could create rules to automatically file the items away, but for me, that meant out of sight, out of mind, and I didn't get to look at that email anyway. And what's more, you'd have to tweak the rules time and again when new emails need to get categorized. So here's the deal. Mail Acton from InDev Software is an add-on to Apple's Mail app, which lets you use the keyboard to select the folder to file the email, amongst other things. Click, click, whoosh. Pressing the Mail Acton's main menu function key F1 brings up a translucent panel which lists a number of single key commands. Type A to apply Acton's rules, more later. M to move the message to a folder. C to copy the message to a folder. Or O to open a folder. Press M and you are presented with a list of folders with the last few used folders near the top. Just press the number corresponding to that folder if it was recently used, or scroll or use the cursor keys to select the folder. Better yet, press the spacebar and then type a sequence of letters and Mail Acton brings up a list of folders with that sequence in the name. Cursor down and press return and it's filed. Neat, huh? Pressing F2 brings up the Mail Acton rules panel, just as you would have done by pressing F1 followed by A, thus saving a keystroke. Mail Acton rules are like mail rules. You create and edit them in the rules section in Mail Preferences. In addition, Mail Acton also adds outbox rules, so sent messages will automatically get filed based on the rules you define. Pressing F3 brings up the Move Messages panel, just like F1 followed by M, yet another shortcut. Now, where Mail Acton shines is in its customized Move to Folders panel. Clicking on Mail Acton in Mail Preferences brings up its preferences. Now click on the Menus part of the segmented button to bring up Mail Acton's Menu Preference pane. Finally, click on the F6 Move to Preferred Folder and the right-hand pane changes to a list of 10 folders. Use the pop-up menus to select a folder to be used for each number. The next time you press F6, your list of folders comes up and all you have to do is to press the number corresponding to the folder you want to move the message to. What could be easier? These Mail Acton actions will work on one message or several selected ones. In addition, you can keep the panels up by pressing the function key twice in a row. Mail Acton's website says reduce the effort required to manage your email, and indeed it has done that for me. You can get a 30-day free trial of Mail Acton from InDev Software's website at www.indev.ca. That's www.indev.ca. If you like it, it only costs just $24.95. But wait, there's more. InDev Software also makes mail tags. And what problem does that solve for me, do you ask? Stay tuned.
So, Kirshen, I'm confused. You're saying there's a better way than leaving thousands and thousands and thousands of emails just sitting in my inbox and having to come up with complex ways to do, like, Boolean searches to find my emails? Wow, who knew? By the way, there is another InDev software with a .com domain, so don't be fooled. The real one is at indev.ca, as Kirshen said. And if you like Kirshen's work, check her out her blog at freerangecoder.com. Well, last week I started telling you about a cool new feature, a free feature that you get with ScreenSteps called ScreenSteps.me. With ScreenSteps, you often want to send someone a lesson, but you don't want to post it on a website or you don't have a website, but you want to send someone a link, say in a message board or an email that gives all the instructions you wrote. With the more recent versions of ScreenSteps, if you select a lesson and click on Share, you still have the options to copy the lesson as a PDF or HTML to the clipboard, but you also have a third option now of sending it to ScreenSteps.me. You'll be prompted to create a free account. Did I mention it's free? And then, boom, your lesson's going to be posted online. You'll get three choices after it's posted. You can see it in HTML, styled HTML, or just the images. Styled has inline CSS, while basic HTML has no styling, so it would just inherit the styling of your blog or forum wherever you posted it. If you already have ScreenSteps, you get all of this for free. If you don't have ScreenSteps yet, maybe this is just the kind of incentive you need. Check it out at ScreenSteps.com, and don't forget my coupon code, that's my name spelled backwards in all capital letters, for 25% off the purchase price of ScreenSteps Desktop Standard or Pro.
Hi, Alison. Jane in Perth, Western Australia here. I'm sure many of your listeners have a unibody MacBook Pro, in which case they may be interested to hear about an open source menu bar application called GFX Card Status, which is aimed at those machines that have the dual graphics processors. Since the introduction of the unibody MacBook Pro in 2008, users of versions sporting dual graphics processors have had the choice of using the less powerful integrated GPU, or gaining better video performance at the cost of precious battery life, by selecting the discrete high-end graphics processor within the machine. The process of swapping between GPUs is achieved via the energy saver settings within System Preferences. Simple enough, you'd think. However, on the late 2008 and 2009 MacBook Pro, the switching process entails the user logging out and then logging back in to activate the change of GPU. Now, I know this isn't much of a hassle in the overall scheme of things, but recently, while travelling around with my MacBook Pro, I went through this ritual 6 times within the space of a day. How much simpler it would have been if I'd had GFX Card Status residing in my menu bar. The app allows quick and easy swapping between graphics processors without the log off and log on process. Click on the app in the menu bar and select Switch GPUs. There then follows a few seconds of flickering blue screen, then normality returns, and the alternate GPU is engaged. In the app's preference pane, you can also choose to have the GFX card status automatically swap the GPU as you move from battery power to main supply, also with a growl notification to let you know this task has been achieved. The menu bar icon handily shows either the letter I for integrated GPU or the letter D, indicating that the discrete GPU is active. I've found it to be a very handy little application. GFX card status is a free download and is available from codykrieger.com. And no doubt the link will be in the No Silicast show notes. Thanks, Alison, and catch you all next time.
Now, the more alert of you, Connor P., might remember that I talked about GFX card status a little while ago, but I played Jane's review now anyway because of a very important update to the product. She mentioned that you can set GFX card status to change your graphics GPU based on whether you are on battery or on the mains. I had written to the developer, Cody Krieger, to tell him back in December that the option was grayed out for me and wouldn't work. He explained that on some of the older machines like mine, it wouldn't work, but when the version 2.0 of GFX card status came out, it would support those older machines. I checked online when I got Jane's review, and sure enough, GFX card status 2 is out, and I now have the full capability of the tool. I gotta tell you though, it's kind of disconcerting that when you plug into the mains, your screen turns blue for a second, and then it comes back with the discrete graphics running the show. It's kind of scary because, I've had that problem with the blue screen logout problem lately, and so it scares me every time I unplug or plug in. But it's going to be neat to have really long battery life when I'm unplugged and good graphics when I'm plugged in. GFX card status is a really terrific application, and I encourage you to try it out. And be sure to push the donate button at codykrieger.com to show your appreciation for this product. Like Jane says, in the big scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal to log out and back in, but if you don't have to do it, it's a huge relief. If you like Jane's review, you can see more of her work at her newly revised website, maxstrings.com, formerly known as Galactic Strings. I hope we hear more from Jane in the future. I love her reviews. Well, it's time for another video interview. Well, we finally made it to the Smile booth. I saved the best for last year. I'm with Jordan Satok, and we're going to talk about advances in Text Expander, one of my absolute favorite applications.
That's great. I'm very happy to hear that.
I can't live without Text Expander, but just in case there's somebody on the planet who hasn't heard about it, what does Text Expander do?
So Text Expander lets you create these short abbreviations that then expand into more content. This is great for frequently used phrases or your signatures in documents, filling web forms, really things that you frequently need to do that saves you a lot of time.
You know, I've never used it for filling web forms. I definitely do the signature, I do naming of folders, all kinds of stuff with it, but in the HTML snippets that I think Gene actually worked on, so that's a lot of fun too.
Yeah, the filling web forms is new in Text Expander 3. So if I can show you Text Expander on the screen here, Text Expander 3 now runs as a standalone application as opposed to a preference pane.
God bless you. I'm telling you, I hated it the other way. I love it as a standalone application. It's so much faster, snappier, and efficient.
It makes it a lot easier to use. So we've created a bunch of sample snippets here. Here's one for Macworld San Francisco. So typing MWSF, for example, anywhere on your computer, any application, will expand it as Macworld San Francisco. This is something that in planning for the show, we've needed to type so many times. So rather than typing Macworld San Francisco so many times, MWSF fixes that problem.
You do know, of course, that's the first snippet I did before I came here in Text Expander. Mine was just MWE, and it comes up.
That's great. That's great. And it also does things like graphics. So here, typing, in this case, SIG1 will expand into an email signature or a document signature, including a graphic. And this can have formatted text, like if you want to have colors in your text or specific fonts, that works as well.
That is really cool. You know, I haven't done that, inserting your signature as a graphic. That's a cool idea.
Yeah, and it works in any program on your Mac, be it a Word document or be it a mail message, anywhere on your Mac.
I've always been worried, though, that somebody's going to take that signature and apply it to some document and say, hey, you signed it, here it is.
You need to be careful. You need to be careful.
All right, what else is new in Text Expander 3?
So Text Expander 3 also has the ability to sync with Dropbox. This was previously available in Text Expander 2, but it was something that you needed to configure yourself. So Text Expander 3 makes it really easy. Right from the preferences, you hit sync and you select Dropbox. And it's one-click install, very, very simple to do. And you can sync between your Macs very easily.
Now, I know that you've got Text Expander on the iPhone. If I've got Dropbox running on my iPhone, can I get to those Text Expander snippets?
It's not something that's available yet, but something we really want to do.
Yeah. Okay. And I see that you've also got Mobile Me Syncing there, too.
Yeah, Mobile Me Syncing has been available for a little while, and it's great.
I'm pretty sure I have that going. I'm actually a one Mac person, so I don't use that too much, but I'm interested in how the iPhone's coming along, too.
Yeah, Text Expander Touch has been doing really well. The thing about Text Expander on the iPhone is that because of some of the limitations in the iPhone SDK, it can't run natively in the background as it does on the Mac. So we've integrated with a bunch of developers to make it work as best as possible. We've now have over 80 applications that support it.
80 applications, yeah, with it. Okay, the last time I tried it, it was like 3. So maybe it's time to give it another try.
It's really great. We've integrated with a lot of really popular applications, things like Things or Elements. Twitter for iPhone has it. Pocket Informant. A lot of great apps that are built right in. These are just some of them.
Oh, I see Simple Note on there.
Yeah, Simple Note supports it. To-Do on the iPhone and iPad support it. Very, very simple to use. So if we take a look at this, just as on the Mac, you have a list of snippets. You have a list of snippets in groups. So here's just our sample group. SIG1, just as it did on the Mac, this syncs wirelessly, is here on the iPad. And going into an app, let's say like Elements, if you create a new document and type your SIG1, type SIG1, then it will expand out your whole message. Really, really simple.
I noticed it didn't bring the graphic in.
Yeah, we just haven't synced that over, and it's unfortunately graphics isn't something we've done on the iPad yet.
Okay.
It's just text for now.
Okay, all right.
Because most of the editors on the iPad aren't rich text, they're just plain text.
So it'd be a waste.
It wouldn't really do much anyway. It also works in apps like Things, which is a very popular to-do app. So here, if I'm going to say demo TET for Text Expander Touch, it just gets inserted right away. I can save that and I guess check it off now that I've demoed it to you. Very simple, very easy to use.
That looks really cool. So let's talk about pricing. How much does Text Expander Touch cost?
So Text Expander Touch is $4.99.
Is that a universal app?
Yeah, that's a universal app for both the iPhone and iPad.
So we only have to buy it once.
You only have to buy it once. Yay! To work on your iPhone and iPad.
There should be a law against people who don't do that. And how about on the Mac?
It's $34.99 and we've got a 20% off show special.
So I know that to some people that might sound like a lot of money, but it's so much fun to just not type stuff over and over and over again. And, you know, we're all getting carpal tunnel syndrome someday, if not already. And to be able to have all that stuff go for you, it just feels so efficient.
Yeah, it's great. I love it myself. And it's always fun to look at. There's a statistics panel in Text Expander that says how much time you've saved. So if you think about what your time is worth, looking at that panel and saying, if I could save 3 hours on my time, it just pays for itself. So,
this is great. What it says for anybody who's just listening, it says snippets expanded 573, characters saved 33,593, hours saved if you were typed at 80 words per minute would be 1.4 hours.
And this is just in the 3 days that we've had it at Macworld. So you can see that typing these things out very quickly saves you a lot of time.
Yeah, I just love it. In fact, this morning my husband leaned over to me and he goes, "How come I don't have Text Expander yet? Why haven't you gotten that for me yet?" So that's on our to-do list. Maybe we'll take advantage of that 20% off
and
coupon.
And we've even got a family pack if the two of you want to use it together.
Oh, there you go. I probably have it and I forgot. I'll just buy it again. All right. Thank you very much for your time, Jordan.
Great. Thank you.
Well, as you heard, we saved Smile for our last interview at Macworld. But then, out of the blue, Guru Parasad from Global Delight came running up to us and he said he was so glad he caught us. He had something new to show us. Guru and I got to know each other 2 years ago working on a screen capture software of Voila. I enjoyed working with him and it was a delight, a global delight, to meet him in person last year at Macworld. I was really glad he tracked us down, partly just to get to say hi, but also to learn about an awesome new tool they've created. Let's listen into this interview.
Well, I thought we were on our final interview, but my buddy Guru from Global Delight just flagged us down and said we need to come over to his booth and talk to Rahul Shetty about Boom.
Yes, the Boom is an exciting software. It's a volume booster for your Mac and music. If you're a laptop user, you would know that the laptop speakers are not all that good when it comes to volume. And Boom can change that for you.
I hate that. I'm always sitting there trying to make it go louder.
Exactly. And Boom is a solution for you. So Boom can boost every application that plays audio and video on your Mac because it works at the system level, which means your online videos, YouTube, Netflix sound louder. QuickTime movies sound louder. Your Skype calls can sound louder. I can just show you a live demo of that.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. Yeah.
So this is a YouTube video. And this is the maximum volume we get out of the system.
Okay, let me listen for a second with the mic.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now, let's boom it. So you launch Boom. 1, 2, 3. This is without Boom, and this is with Boom.
Wow, that's amazing.
It doesn't end there.
Now, turn it off for just a second so I can ask a question.
Okay.
I got to be able to hear, too.
Sure.
So, for people who are just listening, we're looking at a screen that shows an on-off switch, and it can change how much amplification that has. And then it looks like there's a graphic equalizer we're going to play with next.
Yes, you're right. The beauty of Boom is you can now have an equalizer for every application, which means your YouTube can have an equalizer, your Skype can have an equalizer, you can have your own custom preset, right? And that's not all. With Boom, you can also boost your music files.
So specific files, like if you've got one podcaster who's always too quiet night-wise, I could always have his stuff get boosted.
Yes, you can boost your audiobooks, you can boost your podcasts. All you have to do is, you know, go to choose your files from iTunes, you know, boost it to any level you want to.
Okay, so I can see it, I can hear it, and I see it actually happening. I'm going to mute that because it's driving me crazy. But how does it do it? Come on, is this magic?
That's magic. That's magic.
Oh, come on, how are you guys doing that?
We have an algorithm that takes care of a lot of things. One of them is that when you amplify the sound, there is no distortion, and we don't violate the basic structure of the sound. It's a combination of a lot of things.
Wow, that is really, really cool. So how much does Boom cost?
Guess the price.
Would you pay $59.95 for this? No, I'm not going to guess. How much?
It's $5.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Okay, sold. I'm definitely going for that. So, by the way, he's proudly displaying the Notebooks.com Best of Macworld Expo 2011 award. Congratulations, Rahul. This is a very cool application.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Well, that's actually it for all of the interviews that we did at Macworld. I hope you enjoyed them. I hope there were just the right amount, not too many, not too few. We were really, really happy with how they came out. So that was a lot of fun. You know, while we were at Macworld, someone told me that they really, really wish they lived near me for two reasons. One, so I could wax their cars, and two, so they could use Honda Bob. They were so sick of having to drive to the dealer, lose their car for a day, having to arrange rides back and forth, and not even being sure if they were being ripped off or not, or if they'd get the right repairs done. Like Katie, they'd experienced that annoyance of having to go back several times for the same problem. If you're lucky enough to already live in the LA or Orange County area, and you are smart enough to drive a Honda or an Acura, then give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, I hate to admit this, but I actually forgot to do Security Light this week, so let's just head right into Chit Chat Across the Pond. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. And this time it's, it's a Chit Chat Across Los Angeles with a very special guest who is pretty much unlike almost anybody we've ever had. We have Cheyenne Swenson, who is a second grade teacher at the Downey Unified School District. How are you doing today, Cheyenne?
I'm doing good. Thanks.
So I wanted to get Cheyenne on because, first of all, the Downey School District has been doing some incredibly innovative stuff in terms of technology. I'm just really impressed with everything I've been hearing about the school. Cheyenne's mother's on the school board, and I've gotten to know a lot about the school district because of that. And Cheyenne has had some really, really cool Apple experiences in the last couple of weeks that we wanted to dig into. And we want to talk a little bit about new math when we get in here. So this all started with with iPad classes for teachers. Is that right, Jen?
Yeah. There was a training about, well, in January, early January. In September, my principal came to me and said, I signed you up for this training in January. And I was like, okay, whatever. And I didn't know much about it. You know, she just said, it's for Apple. And then, so it was at the, somewhere in Anaheim at one of the hotels down there by Disneyland. And, we went down, we checked in and it was this, it's called the Education Learning Tour. And, it's on the Apple website about how, like, there was a bunch of different teachers from a bunch of different school districts. Including myself, there were four teachers that went from my school.
Oh.
And when we got there, I had no idea. I brought my laptop and everything because I was like, I didn't know what to expect. But
Just told you it was Apple learning stuff.
Yeah, that was it. Like what to do with the computer in school. So when we got there, we all got an iPad, a laptop, and an iPod Touch to use like for the whole day.
Okay, you didn't get to take them home though.
No, I wanted to. I was like hoping the whole time. I'm like, what if there's a big surprise at the end? And they're like, you can take this iPad home.
Well, I loved it. Throughout the day, you kept texting me going, I need an iPad.
I know. I love it.
So you're in the classroom. You've got your iPod, your iPad, and you've got your MacBook. What are they hoping to teach in this class?
Well, they want us to learn how to use all that stuff properly in class so that we get the most out of the technology that we have. You know, they want us to, you know, be able to use the laptop to the best of its ability. They want us to, you know, kind of, you could tell they want us to buy into getting iPads in the classroom. And at school, they wanted us to, you know, explore all the apps for the iPad and the iPod Touches. And
but there's been a lot of talk that it's just, if you add too much technology to the classroom, it's just, you know, playing around and fluff, and you're not actually doing more teaching than if you didn't have them.
Yeah, I could see it can go either way. You know, it just depends on educating like the teachers on how they can best use
when to use it, when not to use it,
how to best use it, how to make sure that, you know, because I mean, at our school, there's teachers who even now, like, I'll email somebody and they'll walk over to my classroom and hand me a note with the answer rather than just replying to the email. And it's like, you know, so it goes from, you know, people like more high tech than me to like, you know, walking back and forth between the classrooms still, you know?
Yeah.
It all depends on who's using the technology. And I mean, anybody can do it. Even the lady who comes over with the, you know, with the notes. I mean, she tries, you know, all the new stuff. And you know, I think with the kids, you know, at home, most of them have computers. Lots of them, their parents have iPhones. Mm. A couple of them have iPads, you know, so it's like if they see that stuff in the classroom, then they can go home and, you know, it kind of carries back and forth. Yeah.
So what kind of applications did they teach you about?
We learned about a ton of applications to use in the classroom. It went, because we were all different grade levels, it went from, you know, like kindergarten, like just tracing, you know, letters and numbers, all the way to like the periodic table apps.
Oh,
you know?
Nice.
Yeah. So it was really cool.
Tracing, was that on the iPad with their fingers?
Uh-huh. On the iPad and the iPod Touch. They both have like a trace and write kind of thing.
Oh, that's awesome. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's lots of fun. It's just like, it's amazing all the stuff that, you know, like is available. You know, it just blows my mind.
Yeah. Now, you were telling me about a company called K-12.
Oh yeah. K-12 has a few apps. They have, a reading fluency one that measures how many words per minute that the students read. And the more fluent they are in reading, the better their comprehension is, and you know, the better reader they become. There's also one on counting coins where they have to, you know, it'll show them 25 cents and it'll say like, make two ways to make 25 cents. And they just drag the pennies and the nickels and whatever over to little boxes to make the money.
Well, I know we're going to get into my new math issues, but I have a game on the iPad that I play it'll show you a number that you have to reach, and it'll be like, you know, 13, and then there'll be a bunch of little buttons with different numbers on them, and you have to pick the ones that add the 13, and I'm really bad at it. You also have to match the color. So like if it's blue, you have to do it with blue ones. You can't pick red ones. But if it's white, you can use any color. So it's really complicated. But it is literally first grade edition, and I have trouble with it. But that's for the new math topic.
That's funny.
So what about any more stuff for math?
There's flashcards where, you know, obviously when they're in first, I teach second grade, so they need to have memorized their basic math facts by now, you know, like 7 + 5 = 12. They just need to know that so that they can move on to, you know, adding with regrouping and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of flashcard apps. I have a time app. It's called Kid Clock, and it shows them how to, you know, tell time, and the hour hand moves with the minute hand, so it's not confusing to them. Because, you know, when it's like 7:45, it kind of looks like 8:45.
Yeah.
So this shows how the hour hand moves, you know, with the minute hand. And so it shows them exactly what it looks like, rather than like a paper clock with a brad in the middle, you know, and they're moving it around to 7:45. It doesn't look like a real clock.
Right. Oh, neat.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun. What about for the upper grade levels?
I didn't pay too much attention to the upper grade ones, but they showed us the periodic table, which is really cool. They showed us that on the iPad, so it was much, you know, more vivid and colorful. And, you know, you could like move around the piece of gold or whatever it was, and you could click on these little things on the side that explained more about the you know, whatever element they were studying. It was like amazing.
Cool. I've seen that demoed. I haven't actually ever gotten to play with it myself, but that one looks really fun.
When
should you not be using these kinds of tools?
Well, you know, you don't want to, the kid, you know, this is my thing, is that, you know, I feel like sometimes they're not engaged when I'm just standing up there by myself. You know, it's like I feel like all the time I have to have flashing lights or a cartoon or something for them to get my attention, which it helps with the iPod and, you know, and the laptop, and we have a document camera and a projector. But sometimes, you know, they just need to remember how to pay attention to people and interact, you know, like with a person, you know, like I'm just as important as the video game or the math bingo that they're playing on their iPod Touch.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, like I have closets full of, you know, plastic money, clocks, rulers, all this kind of stuff I forget about. But with the iPad and the iPod, it's all just like right there. You know, I mean, it can't take place of, you know, like they still need to know how to measure something with like a real ruler. But it just helps that they know that, you know, there's all these different things available for them, like a ruler, an iPod, a laptop. You know, it helps them be more well-rounded, I think.
You know, I have a ruler on the Mac called Free Ruler. It's really cool because I can use it to measure, like, whether I've got the size the way I want it to go onto a web page, that kind of thing. Uh-huh. But you can measure in inches and millimeters, and you can also measure in pixels.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, it's called Free Ruler. That one's really fun. And it's free, of course. But I can see just the physical use of it is it can still be abstract for them if it's on the computer or on the iPhone.
Yeah, they still need to touch the money, you know?
Right. Well, because you can't feel the bumps on the side of a quarter, for example. Right?
Exactly.
To be able to tell this one's a nickel and this one's a quarter. When you feel it, you go, you know right away which one's which. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and then there's all the different money, too. There's all, you know, the nickels changing. There's 50 different quarters.
Yeah, that's got to be confusing for the kids.
Oh, it's very, very, the nickel and the quarter are the worst.
maybe feeling it is more important then.
Yeah.
Because the look of it now is does not define it. It's the size and that bumpy edge that really make it stand out.
It's funny because they know it when they feel it. Like if you were to give them real money, they know that this is a quarter and this is a nickel. But, you know, we have the state testing, whatever, you know, they don't get to feel it during the state testing. You know, it's just like a picture on a piece of paper. So it's
And if you only saw a quarter and there's not something next to it to show you that it's bigger.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really
annoying. You know, the face of the quarter with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson on the nickel, they look almost the same.
Yeah.
They both have a ponytail, I think. you know, it's like hard to be like, well, this guy, you have to look at them, you know, this guy's different than this guy.
I hope they put the little ridges at least graphically on there. That'd be really neat.
I
don't
remember if they do. I think they do.
You'd hope so.
Yeah, I would hope so.
So after a full day of training with the iPad, what do you think of it?
I want it.
It was funny when the iPad first came out, a lot of us went, wow, you know, what do we need this for? You know, it's hard to quantify why you need it, but once you touch one, it just changes everything. So I haven't seen this graph, but I swear this is true, is that for like the first month, the sales of the iPad, I think, were pretty small. And then they just hit a knee in the curve because everybody who had one showed it to 10 people. And those 10 people said, I got to go have that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard to explain if you haven't touched one. It just doesn't – you can't figure out why you need it.
Yeah, I know. Like, I was always like, oh, I have a laptop. I have a computer.
What do I need it for?
But now I want one.
No, I wanted us to buy one for your mother for Christmas. You said she didn't need it, right?
I know. And now she needs it. I looked at my mom and brother last night. I said, when are one of you going to get an iPad?
So that I can take it from you.
Yes, so I can use it.
So what about for the classroom?
I know that, like, it's really hard with such expensive technology to put it in the hand of, like, a 7-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
It would be nice for every kid to have one, of course. I mean, there's, like, 700 kids at our school. That would be, you know, a lot of money. But, I know in the state of Maine, they have a one-to-one with laptops for students in the upper grades. Like, I think it's like 5th through 12th grade, all the students get their own laptop. Like, you know, like, that's just their thing.
No, good ones. Good ones or lame ones? I've heard about some programs where they do it and it's so locked down they can't do anything creative with it.
Oh, I don't know. When we went to that training, that's what they told us.
Oh, okay.
That the state of Maine is doing that.
They must be good ones then, or they wouldn't have quoted it.
Yeah, I would hope so. You know, it's hard, but it would be nice to let them have access to it. You know, like, we have a computer lab where we sit in front of the computers, but, you know, it'd be nice to have it maybe like a little pod of them in the room, you know, where they can sit, they can learn how to use it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's nice that we're starting with the iPod touches, you know, and then I just found out last week that we're getting all the teachers at school are going to get their own iPod touch.
Oh, and then, good.
Yeah, I think we got them. We just bought a bunch of computers. Like 30-something computers for our new computer lab. And jeez. So we got all the iPod touches with them.
So now, I remember you saying, does your classroom now have iPod touches?
Yes. I have 20 iPod touches in my classroom. This lady at the district wrote a grant, and so she got 20 iPod touches. And I don't know how they decided, you know, to bring them to Gallatin, and then my principal asked me if I wanted them in my room, and I was like, of course, hello. Are you kidding me?
Well, probably so, because you give a lot of good feedback on it. You know, if you give them to a teacher who puts them in a closet or who uses them but doesn't tell anybody how good they are, then or how bad they are, either way, you want to give honest feedback, and I think you have a critical eye for it too.
Yeah, so and I had gone to the iPod touch training at school. There was one they had in the district. I already have an iPod touch, so it was like I already kind of knew all this stuff. It was okay. It was okay training, but I'd already gone to that training. So then she's like, do you want these in your classroom? And I was like, of course.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was going like one to every school, but I'm the only one in the whole district or the first person in the whole district to get them. And I get them for 6 to 8 weeks, and the kids, oh my gosh, they're so excited. It is so funny. Like, at first I didn't tell them because I didn't want 10,000 questions about, like, when are we going to get them? So I just told them, you guys, a surprise is coming for you guys next week, whatever. And then it kept, like, the lady was syncing them, and it was, like, taking a day longer and a day longer. So finally I just told them, I'm like, you guys, we're getting 20 iPod touches for our classroom. And they, like, went crazy. They were so excited. And they're like, my mom has an iPhone. My dad has an iPod touch.
Now, this wasn't as exciting as the day I came and talked to them, though.
No.
Okay, no, sure. I don't even remember what I talked to them about. I don't. But it was the pinnacle of their lives.
I'm sure they remember, but I don't.
Me neither. So what was the first thing they wanted to do with them?
Oh, okay. So the very first question, when I said we are getting 20 iPod touches, The very first question was, does it have Angry Birds? And I said, no, it doesn't have Angry Birds, you know, but there's a lot of other stuff, you know. And so their favorite game right now is Math Bingo. It's, you know, it practices their math facts. And then if they get bingo, then they win a little bug. A bingo bug, and then they can like bounce it around in the on this little screen, and it makes noise. And that's
that sounds like something I should work on. Maybe I could get that.
Yeah,
might be able to help.
It's like 99 cents or something like that. Math Bingo.
So one of the things I was telling you is what you might want to tell the kids is about Bubble Ball.
I was looking at that.
Yeah, Bubble Ball is I don't know if it's still topping the charts, but it actually passed Angry Birds for a little while at least. And Bubble Ball was written by a 14-year-old kid. It was written by an eighth grader. I mean, wait, is that the right age? No, well, whatever. He's 14 years old.
And
That just blows me away. And you know, let the kids know, you know, not only can you play with this, but what if you could actually make something for this yourself someday?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's good too. You know, I went through school and I never took one single computer class at all, ever, in college or high school or anything, ever.
Yeah, my kids didn't in high school either. And that really surprised me. They did in college, but not in high school. And they were in, you know, all the advanced placement classes and all that kind of stuff. But there was no computer programming stuff at all. They worked on yearbook. One of them did. And they got a little time on the computer. But of course, in my case, my kids probably get enough computer time. You can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've talked a bunch about math. What about other subjects like reading or writing or that sort of thing?
I was using, there's this one app that, that's on there. It's called Brain Pop, and it has like these little mini videos every day. And there's like social studies videos, language arts videos. Like we watched a video the other day about main idea and details, 'cause we were learning about that in the story that we're reading right now, like in our reading books. And so then they got to watch a video to show them, you know, like where the main idea can be found and, you know, what details are. So it like reinforced what they were already learning. Their story kit, which I think that one's free. It has a bunch of fairy tales on it that you can either read yourself or you can write your own or you can edit them and, you know, make them different.
Oh, that would be fun, reading a fairy tale and all of a sudden you're going, no, the dragon doesn't die.
Yeah.
I think the dragon starts a whole new country, you know? I would
exactly.
love that.
Exactly. Then there's the Scribble Lite. It's kind of like the doodler thing. And that one made me really nervous because they had to shake to erase it.
Oh,
and
you're afraid they're going to go flying across the room?
Never doing that again. I just got nervous, you know? I mean, maybe in a couple days when they're more used to holding it. And I won't even let them get out of their seats.
Oh, you know? Good.
I sit down. You don't hold it up. One person touches it at a time because I have 25 students, so, and we have 20 iPods.
Oh, that's mean.
I know. I'm like, I just want five more. I use mine in class. Like, I downloaded all the same apps, and so they can use mine. So there's 21, you know, so.
And you're hoping four kids are absent that day?
No, it's just like, oh, gosh, it's, you know, it's hard, especially when they have to listen to things, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm like, one person touches it at a time. If you're, you know, misusing it, I'm taking it away, you know.
The one thing that amazed me watching you in the classroom is that you are absolutely in control of those children. And I, you know, they terrify me. So the fact that you're the alpha dog in the room is just like amazing. I don't know how you do it, but I can just picture you saying, you don't get up. And they're all like, okay, I don't get up, Ms. Benson,
no.
I promise.
Like, do not get out of your seat. Do not, you know. Do not do this. You know, don't hold it up in the air and show me anything. Just keep it down on your desk.
Oh, I bet that is tempting, going, look, Miss Swenson, and you picture them holding it up, swinging it around their head.
No. I'm like, oh my gosh, put it down.
This is cool. I didn't realize there were this many in the education category.
Oh, there's a ton. There's a ton. I can't even name them all. There's like sight words, you know, oh, there's like stories that they can read. I forget this one that Molly and somebody or something like that. And it's just like a story that you can just read, like a little book, but it's an app. They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's what I liked about the iPad too, is that there were books on there, mm-hmm. like this like pig, you know, Olivia, and you can, you know, like read the book on the iPad.
You think about the cost. One of the things I've thought a lot about, and they talk about online a lot, is that as we go towards the iPad or tablet, any kind of tablet kind of technology, you could have classroom books that are updated. I was listening to some teacher talking about how, like, their books, the Berlin Wall hasn't fallen yet in their history books, you know? It's like, oh, geez. So to be able to have it where, you know, you could say Pluto's a planet. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. You know, you just
change
it.
Yeah, I have stuff in there that says Pluto's still a planet, you know, because there's old. They're just old.
I'm still upset about that. We shouldn't talk about that. So do you see places in technology where technology is actually getting in the way of learning?
Sometimes the kids, they kind of like depend on it too much, you know? You know, like where with the spelling, you know, how if you're typing something in Word or even if you're typing something on the iPod, it'll just kind of fix it for you, you know, or underline it red so you know.
Yeah.
But then when you go to write a note to somebody, everything's spelled wrong. You know, that doesn't look very professional or anything like that. We have a diagnostic test, reading test that we take online. It's okay, but the test, some of the kids, they don't have a computer at home. You know, they just don't. Right. Or they have one, but only their parents are allowed to use it, you know. So they're not familiar with how to, you know, push the back button and, you know, how to use a mouse. You know, it's funny when they're trying to get to the upper left corner of something and they're like pushing the keypad and all that kind of stuff, the keyboard, right, all the way across because they don't know to pick up the mouse, you know, go back. It's funny. You can tell, like, or they're like straining into the other person's area to go in the bottom right corner, you know?
Right.
So, you know, when there's little obstacles like that and they're supposed to be taking a reading test, it's kind of like, well,
so they're at a disadvantage. Even if they could read well, they might have trouble with it.
Exactly. They don't know exactly. And then also sitting in front of a computer, you know, for someone who's 8 years old for like 30 minutes reading, it gets kind of boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so.
Or at least with a book, you can, you know, lay on your back with your feet in the air and,
exactly,
you know, lay on your stomach for a while. You can move around, but sitting in front of a computer is tougher.
Yeah, it is. It's hard. But, you know, I mean, it's nothing. Obviously, nothing can replace like a one-on-one reading with somebody, you know, but it's like, you know, I think that the technology can help, you know, and like, you know, like maybe you're reading with your teacher. Okay, now do this thing on the iPod. Or okay, now go, you know, on the computer and do this. Or go read with a buddy. You know, there's like, I mean, obviously computers aren't going anywhere. You know, they need to know how to do that kind of stuff. So
Right. I really feel bad when I meet a kid that doesn't have a computer at all.
I know, it's weird.
Our housekeeper has an 8-year-old son and she didn't have a computer. And, you know, I'm sitting there looking, I've got a G5 sitting in the corner, you know, that I keep thinking, oh, I could sell that for like $300. I went, oh man, I'm just going to give it to her because this is just wrong. This kid needs a computer. So I cracked up. She took 2 weeks to plug it in. Oh, come on, do it. And then it was like another week, we're going to get the internet soon, you know?
Oh,
like,
oh
no, get him going. But yeah, I mean, he'd be at a huge disadvantage and he's probably a real clever kid, you know, but he'd get behind because he doesn't have it. So, well, this has been really cool. I love to hear the advances, but I'm always hesitant to assume there's too much about technology. One thing I wonder what you think about this. I've been, I used the Palm Pilot and the later on the Sony Clié for years, and I learned how to use the graffiti language that you wrote with back then. And right around that time, I started to notice that my skills writing with a pencil were starting to slip. And now, as I don't use the Palm anymore, but I type all day long. I mean, I'm on my computer all the time. I'm almost unintelligible in written form now, and I can't write my own name without like too many bumps on the M's. I mean, I'll have like 7 bumps on the M, like my hand just goes, and I can't write. I mean, to write an entire like a thank you note that's maybe half size of a piece of paper, my hand cramps up. So I'm wondering whether we might actually lose handwritten language.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I think that. I mean, it's so personal, you know, to get a note written by somebody, you know, like you were saying, like a thank you note. Like I could send an e-card that says thank you, and it's cute, but it's like, I was thinking the other day, I'm like, nobody really sends like birthday cards in the mail anymore. You know, it's like, oh, here's an e-card or a text message, you know, happy B-Day.
or right on your Facebook wall. That's it.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, it's nice to get all those things to be thought of, but it's always nice too to, you know, have something like personal from somebody. I think that's just,
I try, but it hurts. I mean, it's physically painful to write by hand now. So what I do is I try to pick a really pretty font, but I write a long letter. You know, I'll write, you know, three or four paragraphs, but I'll pick a font that sort of looks like handwriting.
Uh-huh.
So at least it shows there's personal thought other than happy B-Day. You know?
Yes.
Have an awesome day.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get down to the most important topic here. We need to talk about new math. So the people on my show have heard about this, and your mother has lived it. I was taught math during a very, very short period in the 1960s where it was like 1 to 2 years long, according to the Wikipedia article I found, where they decided that you didn't need to know your math facts. They said, that's not necessary, because as long as you know a couple of them, you can figure the other ones out. So instead of teaching me that 8 plus 5 was 13, right?
Uh-huh.
Instead of teaching me that, they said, okay, well, you know what kinds of stuff adds to 10, because that's an easy one. Everybody knows those. 8 plus 2 is 10, and 5 is 2 plus 3, so 2 plus 8 is 5 is 10 plus 3 is 13. I have to do that. I'm not joking. I'm not joking. I have to do that in my head every time I run into 8 plus 5.
Wow.
So it's as though I was taught to read phonetically and I wasn't allowed to memorize the words. Mm-hmm. So every word, imagine trying to read phonetically every single word you read. And that's what doing math is like for me. When I was in high school, my dad bought flashcards and we sat down. We tried to get it out of me. We tried to see if I could learn it. And by then it was too late.
Wow.
And so that's why I play that stupid little game, because I'm convinced it's the eights that really scare me.
Uh-huh.
But I used to have to – I'd be presenting in front of I had 170 people working for me. I was managing a $50 million a year budget. And when I would get to a math number that I had to say, I would look to Nancy to ask her what the number was, because I wasn't sure. I'd be off by $1 million and I wouldn't even know.
Wow.
So when your mother told me that you guys were doing some new math, I said, I got to hear about this and challenge it. So what
I don't know if it's exactly the same as that.
Well, I hope it isn't.
No, it's just like, you know, well, I mean, maybe not you, but like, because you've got this whole weird math thing going on. But we saw this guy, his name is Ivan Alba. He came to our district and he was showing us like how to show the kids a different way to look at math. You know, and I mean, it was the same thing where it was like, how do you make 10, you know, you know, like 7 plus 3 is 10. So 7 plus 5, you know, it could be 12. I mean, he didn't really get too much into that, but he was more showing us how, like, you know, if someone were to give me the problem, like 27 plus 56, you know, I'm not going to write it down, you know, and like carry and borrow, whatever, all that kind of stuff. You just kind of think of it as, oh, okay, well, you know, 27 plus 50 is 77, and six more, you know, would be like 83. So he's just showing us how, like, sometimes you don't have to have everything written down and carrying over and all that kind of stuff when they could probably do it in their head already.
The only hard part about that for me is knowing that 7 and 6 is 13.
Yes. See, that's what we went back to, is like, they still need to know their basic facts, or else they're not going to know 7 plus 6 is 13.
Yeah.
Or that 27 plus 50 is 77. You know, they're going to be like, what? You know, I don't get it. And one kid in my class this year, there's always one. Sometimes there's two or three. One kid for sure. There's a couple more. They already do that automatically. Like, it's just in their mind.
It's instinctive, huh?
Yeah. This kid, he's like, oh, I go, well, how did you do that? You didn't write it down. And he told me, he's like, oh, well, 27 plus 50 is this, and plus six more is this. And, you know, he just like went on to explain the whole thing.
What's good about that, too, is that means he understands it.
Yes, exactly.
He conceptually understands it, not just he's got stuff memorized.
Exactly. And then that's the other thing is this guy, he went from, you know, basic math facts to like 7 plus 6 is 13, and then showed us how, you know, the 27 plus 56, and went all the way through like 8th grade algebra. Like, he just took one problem and he went through and how this learning this when they're in kindergarten, you know, helps them learn algebra when they're in like 8th grade, like learning that breaking down of numbers, like breaking them all apart and then putting them back together.
So it is a little bit like new math, except you can't do it unless you've memorized your math facts.
Yes. At some point in there, you need to know your math facts.
I was really happy when my kids were little. They went to a terrific school, and they had math stars. So they had three big boards with if you got your addition facts done in a certain length of time as a kindergartner, kindergarten, first grade. So if you could do these 10 problems in 10 minutes, you know, you got to have your star on the board. And then once you got that, then the next year you had to do it faster and you had to do more of them. And then you had to do subtraction and then you had to do multiplication, division. And it was just such a celebration of success at the one thing I can't do. I was just so happy about it because they really, really emphasized it. And I mean, my kids are brilliant, of course, but you know, to have that be something celebrated, it was really cool to me.
Yeah. We have like a timed test, you know, and we give them awards at the assemblies. And, you know, I mean, we practice their math facts in class. But a lot of it, they like go home and, you know, that's just it. They just go home, you know, like nobody really like it's not really reinforced anywhere. So it's kind of like you can tell, you know, the kids whose parents are like, you know, quizzing them and practicing, and then the kids who just go home and their parents are busy, or
maybe they're working two jobs or whatever.
Yeah, or they go to daycare and they just don't, you know, have the time. So it's like we're doing the math bingo right now. I gave them a timed test before we got started. And so I'm hoping in 6 or 8 weeks, you know, just being able to use the math bingo every day and doing something with facts.
See if you can get their scores up.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I like that. I'd really be interested in hearing how that works out, whether you can measure the effect that it's had to use the math bingo. That would be really that would be really fun because they're enjoying it too.
Oh, they love it.
Shows that math is fun. You know, and I think just having the idea that math is fun is cool.
Yeah. And a bunch of them are going home and they're like, you know, putting the same apps that we have on our iPods in class. Like, I'm like, you guys, it's only 99 cents or this one's free. You know, like you can go home and you can ask your parents, you know, if they'll let you put the clock on their phone or put the math bingo or the, you know, whatever we're doing in class.
That's cool. They're not just playing Angry Birds.
No.
You know, I did an interesting thing when my daughter was in second grade. She had a friend over and she was, it didn't have the greatest influences intellectually in her life. Her family was kind of weird and stuff. But she was blonde and she started to do this blonde dumb thing where she was in second grade and she goes, I don't like math. You know, I heard about algebra. Algebra is hard. And it was a sleepover, right? And I said, all right, you two sit down. We're going to learn algebra. Like, yeah, I'm a fun mom, let me tell you, you know, but it was the funnest thing because if you know your math facts, algebra actually, like the basic concepts of algebra are not really that hard. We just don't teach it for like another 10 years, you know?
Exactly.
So I sat the girls down and I said, okay, you got one apple and two apples is how many apples? And they go, three, mom, I know that. I said, well, what if you had one apple plus what is three apples? And they said, well, two. I said, all right, you're starting to do algebra. Okay, I said, okay, one plus x equals three. And they went, well, x equals two. I said, you're doing algebra right now. And they're like, and they both got really excited. They said, do another one. And I mean, I had them doing like, you know, 3x plus 7 equals 20 things. You know, I mean, they were into it. And I know they wouldn't remember how to do it when the time came, but they remembered that they liked it and that it was fun and that it wasn't hard. And I was just so proud of that moment where I just forced these poor two little 7-year-old girls to do algebra on a sleepover.
Yeah.
But I figure if I convinced them it was fun, That makes all the difference, right?
Yeah, and they had that background, you know, so when they did it, they were like, oh, I've seen something like this already.
Yeah, exactly, and it wasn't hard and scary. Certainly not as fun as the way I taught it when they get there, I'm sure. But
yeah, probably.
See, I actually don't hate children. I hate them in large numbers.
Like 25 of them.
It's like when you get one ant in your kitchen, it's no big deal, but if you see a whole string of them, it gives you the heebie-jeebies.
Yes.
Same thing. Well, Cheyenne, I really appreciate you spending the time with us today. This was really fun, and I'm excited that you're getting to do this. And I think you're definitely the right person to test this for the Downey School District.
I'm excited I got to talk to you about it. I haven't got to talk to really anybody about it yet. I have some people coming to my classroom next week, so I'm glad I got to talk to you about it.
Yeah, well, maybe you can tell them to listen to the show.
Yeah, totally.
You could hear it. Actually, tell your principal.
I'll tell her. She'll be excited.
And some big thumbs up for the Downey School District for being really forward thinking here.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Cheyenne.
Okay.
Well, you can tell I had so much fun talking to Cheyenne. These are really exciting times if your school is as forward-thinking as the Downey School District. Well, be sure to tune in next week for the 300th episode. Who's baking the cake, by the way? Well, until then, keep your dumb questions coming along with comments and suggestions by writing to me at allison@podfeet.com. And follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. And heck, if you haven't already made a comment in iTunes, head on over there and give us some stars, show some love. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.